used as a weapon. Long ago, it had been used that way, and some Moroi still secretly did today. Christian, I knew, was one of them. I suddenly had a good idea of where he might have picked up that kind of thing. Silence fell. It was hard to follow up a sad story like that. But Tasha, I realized, was one of those people who could always lighten a mood. It made me like her even more, and she spent the rest of the time telling us funny stories. She didn't put on airs like a lot of royals did, so she had lots of dirt on everyone. Dimitri knew a lot of people she spoke of. Honestly, how did someone so antisocial seem to know everyone in Moroi and Guardian society, and would occasionally add some small detail? They had us in hysterics until Tasha finally looked at her watch. "Where's the best place a girl can go shopping around here?" she asked. Lissa and I exchanged looks. "Missoula," we said in unison. Tasha sighed. "That's a couple hours away, but if I leave soon, I can probably still get in some time before the stores close. I'm hopelessly behind in Christmas shopping." I groaned. "I'd kill to go shopping." "Me too," said Lissa. "Maybe we could sneak along." I gave Dimitri a hopeful look.
"No,"
he said immediately. I gave a sigh of my own. Tasha yawned again.
"I'll have to grab some coffee so I don't sleep on the drive-in."
"Can't one of your guardians drive for you?" She shook her head.
"I don't have any."
"Don't have any?" I frowned, parsing her words. "You don't have any guardians?"
"Nope."
I shot up. "But that's not possible. You're royal. You should have at least one, two, really." Guardians were distributed among Moroi in a cryptic, micromanaged way by the Guardian Council. It was kind of an unfair system considering the ratio of guardians to Moroi. Non-royals tended to get them by a lottery system. Royals always got them. High-ranking royals often got more than one, but even the lowest-ranking member of royalty wouldn't have been without one.
"The Ozeras aren't exactly first in line when guardians get assigned,"
said Christian bitterly.
"Ever since my parents died, there's kind of been a shortage."
My anger flared up. "But that's not fair. They can't punish you for what your parents did."
"It's not punishment, Rose."
Tasha didn't seem nearly as enraged as she should have been, in my opinion.
"It's just a rearranging of priorities."
"They're leaving you defenseless. You can't go out there by yourself."
"I'm not defenseless, Rose. I've told you that. And if I really wanted a guardian, I could make a nuisance of myself. But it's a lot of hassle. I'm fine for now."
Dimitri glanced over at her.
"You want me to go with you?
And keep you up all night?"
Tasha shook her head.
"I wouldn't do that to you, Dimka."
"He doesn't mind," I said quickly, excited about this solution. Dimitri seemed amused by me speaking for him, but he didn't contradict me.
"I really don't."
She hesitated.
"All right, but we should probably go soon."
Our illicit party dispersed. The Moroi went one direction, Dimitri and I went another. He and Tasha made plans to meet up in a half hour.
"So, what do you think of her?"
he asked when we were alone. "I like her. She's cool." I thought about her for a moment. "And I get what you mean about the marks."
"Oh?"
I nodded, watching my footing as we walked along the paths. Even when salted and shoveled, they could still collect hidden patches of ice. "She didn't do what she did for glory. She did it because she had to. Just like my mom did." I hated to admit it, but it was true. Janine Hathaway might be the worst mother ever, but she was a great guardian. The marks don't matter. Monia's or scars.
"You're a fast learner," he said with approval.
I swelled under his praise. "Why does she call you Dimka?" He laughed softly. I'd heard a lot of his laughter tonight and decided I'd like to hear more of it.
"It's a nickname for Dimitri."
"That doesn't make any sense. Doesn't sound anything like Dimitri. You should be called, I don't know, Demi or something."
"That's not how it works in Russian,"
he said. "Russian's weird." In Russian, the nickname for Vasilisa was Vasya, which made no sense to me.
so is English.
I gave him a sly look. If you'd teach me to swear in Russian, I might have a new appreciation for it.
You swear too much already.
I just want to express myself.
Oh, Rosa.
He sighed, and I felt a thrill tickle me. Rosa was my name in Russian. He rarely used it.
You express yourself more than anyone else I know.
I smiled and walked on a bit without saying anything else. My heart skipped a beat. I was so happy to be around him. There was something warm and right about us being together. Even as I floated along, my mind churned over something else that I'd been thinking about. You know, there's something funny about Tasha's scars.
What's that?
He asked. The scars. They mess up her face, I began slowly. I was having trouble putting my thoughts into words. I mean, it's obvious she used to be really pretty. But even with the scars now, I don't know. She's pretty in a different way. It's like they're part of her. They complete her. It sounded silly, but it was true. Dmitri didn't say anything, but he gave me a sidelong glance. I returned it, and our eyes met. I saw the briefest glimpse of the old attraction. It was fleeting and gone too soon, but I'd seen it. Pride and approval replaced it, and they were almost as good. When he spoke, it was to echo his earlier thoughts. You're a fast learner, Rosa. Chapter 6. I was feeling pretty good about life when I headed to my before-school practice the next day. The secret gathering last night had been super fun, and I felt proudly responsible for fighting the system and encouraging Dmitri to go with Tasha. Better still, I'd gotten my first crack at a silver steak yesterday and had proven I could handle one. High on myself, I couldn't wait to practice even more. Once I was dressed in my usual workout attire, I practically skipped down to the gym. But when I stuck my head inside the practice room from the day before, I found it dark and quiet. Flipping on the light, I peered around just in case Dmitri was conducting some kind of weird covert training exercise. Nope. Empty. No staking today. Shit, I muttered.
He's not here.
I yelped and nearly jumped 10 feet in the air. Turning around, I looked straight into my mother's narrowed brown eyes. What are you doing here? As soon as the words were out of my mouth, her appearance registered with me. A stretchy spandex shirt with short sleeves, loose drawstring workout pants similar to the ones I wore. Shit, I said again.
Watch your mouth, she snapped. You might behave like you have no manners, but at least try not to sound that way.
Where's Dmitri?
Guardian Belikov is in bed. He just got back a couple of hours ago and needed to sleep.
Another expletive was on my lips, and I bit it back. Of course Dmitri was asleep. He'd had to drive with Tasha to Missoula during daylight in order to be there during human shopping hours. He'd technically been up all of the academy's night and probably only just gotten back. Ugh. I wouldn't have been so quick to encourage him to help her if I'd known it'd result in this. Well, I said hastily, I guess that means practice is canceled.
Be quiet and put these on.
She handed me some training mitts. They were similar to boxing gloves, but not as thick and bulky. They shared the same purpose, however, to protect your hands and keep you from gouging your opponent with your nails. We've been working on silver stakes, I said sulkily, shoving my hands into the mitts.
Well, today we're doing this. Come on.
Wishing I'd been hit by a bus on my walk from the dorm today, I followed her out toward the center of the gym. Her curly hair was pinned up to stay out of the way, revealing the back of her neck. The skin there was covered in tattoos. The top one was a serpentine line, the promise mark, given when guardians graduated from academics like St. Vladimir's and agreed to serve. Below that were the Molniya marks, awarded each time a guardian killed a Strogoi. They were shaped like the lightning bolts they took their name from. I couldn't gauge exact numbers, but let's just say it was a wonder my mom had any neck left to tattoo.
She'd wielded a lot of death in her time. When she reached the spot she wanted, she turned toward me and adopted an attack stance. Half expecting her to jump me then and there, I quickly mirrored it. "What are we doing?" I asked.
"Basic offensive and defensive parrying. Use the red lines."
"That's all?" I asked. She leapt toward me. I dodged, just barely, and tripped over my own feet in the process. Hastily, I righted myself.
"Well,"
she said in a voice that almost sounded sarcastic,
"as you seem so keen on reminding me, I haven't seen you in 5 years. I have no idea what you can do."
She moved on me again, and again I just barely kept within the lines in escaping her. That quickly became the pattern. She never really gave me the chance to go on the offensive. Or maybe I just didn't have the skills to take the offensive. I spent all my time defending myself, physically at least. Grudgingly, I had to acknowledge to myself that she was good. Really good. But I certainly wasn't going to tell her that.
"So what?" I asked. "This is your way of making up for maternal negligence?"
"This is my way of making you get rid of that chip on your shoulder. You've had nothing but attitude for me since I arrived. You want to fight?"
Her fist shot out and connected with my arm.
"Then we'll fight. Point."
"Point," I conceded, backing up to my side. "I don't want to fight. I've just been trying to talk to you."
"Mouthing off to me in class isn't what I'd really call talking. Point."
I grunted from the hit. When I'd first begun training with Dimitri, I'd complained that it wasn't fair for me to fight someone a foot taller than me. He'd pointed out that I'd fight plenty of Strigoi taller than me, and that the old adage was true. Size doesn't matter. Sometimes I thought he was giving me false hope, but judging from my mom's performance here, I was starting to believe him. I'd never actually fought anyone smaller than me. As one of the few girls in the novice classes, I accepted that I was almost always going to be shorter and slimmer than my opponents, but my mother was smaller still and clearly had nothing but muscle packed into her petite body. "I have a unique style of communication, that's all," I said.
"You have a petty teenage delusion that you've somehow been wronged for the last 17 years.
Her foot hit my thigh.
"Point. When in reality, you've been treated no differently than any other dampier. Better, actually. I could have sent you off to live with my cousins. You want to be a blood whore? Is that what you wanted?"
The term blood whore always made me flinch. It was a term often applied to the single dampier mothers who decided to raise their children instead of becoming guardians. These women often had short-term affairs with Moroi men and were looked down on for it. Even though there wasn't really anything else they could have done, since Moroi men usually ended up marrying Moroi women. The blood whore term came from the fact that some dampier women let men drink blood from them during sex. In our world, only humans gave blood. A dampier doing it was dirty and kinky, especially during sex. I suspected only a few dampier women actually did this, but unfairly, the term tended to get applied to all of them. I had given blood to Lyssa when we had run away, and although it had been a necessary act, the stigma still stayed with me.
"No, of course I don't want to be a blood whore."
My breathing was becoming heavy. "And they're not all like that. There's only a few that actually are."
"They bring that reputation on themselves," she growled. I dodged her strike. "They should be doing their duty as guardians, not continuing to fool around and have flings with Moroi."
"They're raising their children," I grunted. I wanted to yell but couldn't waste the oxygen. "Something you'd know nothing about. Besides, aren't you the same as they are? I don't see a ring on your finger. Wasn't my dad just a fling for you?" Her face turned hard, which is saying something when you're already beating up your daughter.
"That," she said tightly, "is something you know nothing about. Point."
I winced at the blow but was happy to see I'd struck a nerve. I had no clue who my dad was. The only bit of information I had was that he was Turkish. I might have my mom's curvy figure and pretty face, though I could smugly say mine was much prettier than hers nowadays, but the rest of my coloring was from him. Lightly tanned skin with dark hair and eyes.
How'd it happen? I asked. Were you on some assignment in Turkey? Meet him at a local bazaar? Or was it even cheaper than that? Did you go all Darwin and select the guy most likely to pass on warrior genes to your offspring? I mean, I know you only had me because it was your duty, so I suppose you had to make sure you could give the Guardians the best specimen you could.
Rosemary, she warned through gritted teeth. For once in your life, shut up.
Why? Am I tarnishing your precious reputation? It's just like you told me. You aren't any different from any other Dampier either. You just screwed him in. There's a reason, they say, pride goeth before a fall. I was so caught up in my own cocky triumph that I stopped paying attention to my feet. I was too close to the red line. Going outside of it was another point for her. So I scrambled to stay within and dodge her at the same time. Unfortunately, only one of those could work. Her fist came flying at me, fast and hard. And perhaps most importantly, a bit higher than the permissible according to rules of this kind of exercise. It smacked me in the face with the power of a small truck, and I flew backward, hitting the hard gym floor, back first and head second. And I was out of the lines. Damn it. Pain cracked through the back of my head, and my vision went blurry and sparkly. Within seconds, my mother was leaning over me.
Rose. Rose. Are you okay?
Her voice sounded hoarse and frantic. The world swam. At some point after that, other people came, and I somehow wound up in the Academy's med clinic. There, someone shone a light in my eyes and started asking me incredibly idiotic questions.
What's your name?
What? I asked, squinting at the light.
Your name.
I recognized Dr. Olensky peering over me. You know my name.
I want you to tell me.
Rose. Rose Hathaway.
Do you know your birthday?
Of course I do. Why are you asking me such stupid things? Did you lose my records?
Dr. Olensky gave an exasperated sigh and walked off, taking the annoying light with her. I think she's fine, I heard her tell someone. I want to keep her here for the school day, just to make sure she doesn't have a concussion. I certainly don't want her anywhere near her guardian classes.
I spent the day moving in and out of sleep because Dr. Olensky kept waking me up to do her tests. She also gave me an ice pack and told me to keep it close to my face. When the Academy's classes let out, she deemed me well enough to leave.
I swear, Rose, I think you should have a frequent patience card.
There was a small smile on her face.
Short of those with chronic problems like allergies and asthma, I don't think there's any other student I've seen here so often in such a short period of time.
Thanks, I said, not really sure I wanted the honor. So, no concussion? She shook her head.
No. You're going to have some pain, though. I'll give you something for that before you go.
Her smile faded, and suddenly she looked nervous.
To be honest, Rose, I think most of the damage happened to, well, your face.
I shot up from the bed. What do you mean most of the damage happened to my face? She gestured to the mirror above the sink on the far side of the room. I ran over to it and looked at my reflection. Son of a bitch!
Purplish-red splotches covered the upper portion of the left side of my face, particularly near the eye. Desperately, I turned around to face her.
This is going to go away soon, right, if I keep ice on it?
She shook her head again. The ice can help, but I'm afraid you're going to have a wicked black eye. It'll probably be at its worst tomorrow, but should clear up in a week or so. You'll be back to normal before long.
I left the clinic in a daze that had nothing to do with my head injury. Clear up in a week or so? How could Dr. Olensky speak so lightly about this? Didn't she realize what was happening? I was going to look like a mutant for Christmas and most of the ski trip. I had a black eye. A freaking black eye. And my mother had given it to me. Chapter 7. I angrily pushed through the double doors that led into the Moroi dorm.
Snow swirled in behind me, and a few people lingering on the main floor glanced up upon my entrance. Not surprisingly, several of them did double takes. Swallowing, I forced myself not to react. It would be okay. No need to freak out. Novices got injured all the time. It was actually rarer not to get injured. Admittedly, this was a more noticeable injury than most, but I could live with it until it healed, right? And it wasn't like anyone would know how I'd received it. Hey, Rose, is it true your own mother punched you? I froze. I'd know that taunting soprano voice anywhere. Turning slowly, I looked into the deep blue eyes of Mia Rinaldi. Curly blonde hair framed a face that might have been cute, if not for the malicious smirk on it. A year younger than us, Mia'd taken on Lissa, and me by default, in a war to see who could tear apart the other's life most quickly. A war, I should add, that she started. It had involved her stealing Lissa's ex-boyfriend. Despite the fact Lissa had decided in the end she didn't want him, and the spreading of all sorts of rumors. Admittedly, Mia's hatred hadn't been entirely unjustified. Lissa's older brother Andre, who had been killed in the same car accident that technically killed me, had used Mia pretty badly when she was a freshman. If she weren't such a bitch now, I would have felt sorry for her. It had been wrong of him, and while I could understand her anger, I don't know that it was fair of her to take that out on Lissa in the way she did. Lissa and I had technically won the war in the end, but Mia had inexplicably bounced back. She didn't run with the same elite that she once had, but she had rebuilt a small contingent of friends. Malicious or not, strong leaders always attract followers. I'd found that about 90% of the time, the most effective response was to ignore her. But we had just crossed over to the other 10% because it's impossible to ignore someone announcing to the world that your mother just punched you, even if it was true. I stopped walking and turned around. Mia stood near a vending machine, knowing she'd drawn me out. I didn't bother asking how she'd found out about my mother giving me the black eye. Things rarely stayed secret around here. When she caught full sight of my face, her eyes widened in unabashed delight. Wow! Talk about a face only a mother could love! Huh! Cute. From anyone else, I would have applauded the joke. Well, you're the expert on face injury, I said. How's your nose? Mia's icy smile twitched a little, but she didn't back down. I'd broken her nose about a month ago, at a school dance of all places, and while the nose had since healed, it now sat just the tiniest bit askew. Plastic surgery could probably fix it up, but from my understanding of her family's finances, that wasn't possible just now. It's better, she replied primly. Fortunately, it was only broken by a psychopathic whore and not anyone actually related to me. I gave her my best psychopathic smile. Too bad. Family members hit you by accident. Psychopathic whores tend to come back for more. Threatening physical violence against her was usually a pretty sound tactic, but we had too many people around right now for that to be a legitimate concern for her, and Mia knew it. Not that I was above attacking someone in this kind of setting. Hell, I'd done it lots of times, but I was trying to work on my impulse control lately. Doesn't look like much of an accident to me, she said. Don't you guys have rules about face punches? I mean, that looks really far out of bounds. I opened my mouth to tell her off, but nothing came out. She had a point. My injury was far out of bounds. In that sort of combat, you aren't supposed to hit above the neck. This was way above that forbidden line. Mia saw my hesitation, and it was like Christmas morning had come a week early for her. Until that moment, I don't think there'd ever been a time in our antagonistic relationship in which she'd rendered me speechless. Ladies, came a stern female voice. The Maroi attending the front desk leaned over it and fixed us with a sharp look. This is a lobby, not a lounge. Either go upstairs or go outside. For a moment, breaking Mia's nose again sounded like the best idea in the world. To hell with detention or suspension. After a deep breath, I decided retreat was my most dignified action now. I stalked off toward the stairs leading up to the girls' dorm. Over my shoulder, I heard Mia call, "Don't worry, Rose. It'll go away. Besides, it's not your face guys are interested in." 30 seconds later, I beat on Liz's door so hard it was a wonder my fist didn't go through the wood. She opened it slowly and peered around. "Is it just you out here? I thought there was an army at the..." Oh, my God. Her eyebrows shot up when she noticed the left side of my face. "What happened?" "You haven't heard already? You're probably the only one in the school who hasn't," I grumbled. "Just let me in." Sprawling on her bed, I told her about the day's events. She was properly appalled. "I heard you'd been hurt, but I figured it was one of your normal things," she said. I stared up at the spackled ceiling, feeling miserable. The worst part is, Mia was right. It wasn't an accident. "What, you're saying your mom did it on purpose?" When I didn't answer, Liz's voice turned incredulous. "Come on, she wouldn't do that, no way." "Why? Because she's perfect Janine Hathaway, master of controlling her temper? The thing is, she's also perfect Janine Hathaway, master of fighting and controlling her actions. One way or another, she slipped up."
"Yeah, well," said Lissa, "I think her stumbling and missing her punch is more likely than her doing it on purpose. She'd have to really lose her temper."
"Well, she was talking to me. That's enough to make anyone lose their temper. And I accused her of sleeping with my dad because he was the soundest evolutionary choice."
"Rose," groaned Lissa, "you kind of left out that part in your recap. Why'd you say that to her?"
"Because it's probably true."
"But you had to know it upset her. Why do you keep provoking her? Why can't you just make peace with her?"
I sat upright. "Make peace with her? She gave me a black eye, probably on purpose. How do I make peace with someone like that?" Lissa just shook her head and walked over to the mirror to check her makeup. The feelings coming through our bond were ones of frustration and exasperation. Lingering in the back was a bit of anticipation, too. I had the patience to examine her carefully, now that I'd finished my venting. She had on a silky lavender shirt and a knee-length black skirt. Her long hair had the kind of smooth perfection only achieved by spending an hour of your life on it with a hairdryer and flat iron.
"You look nice. What's up?"
Her feelings shifted slightly, her irritation with me dimming a little.
"I'm meeting Christian soon."
For a few minutes there, it had felt like the old days with Lissa and me. Just us, hanging out and talking. Her mention of Christian, as well as the realization that she'd have to leave me soon for him, stirred up dark feelings in my chest. Feelings I had to reluctantly admit were jealousy. Naturally, I didn't let on to that.
"Wow, what'd he do to deserve that? Rescue orphans from a burning building? If so, you might want to make sure he didn't set the building on fire in the first place."
Christian's element was fire. It was fitting since it was the most destructive one. Laughing, she turned from the mirror and noticed me gently touching my swollen face with my fingers. Her smile turned kind.
"It doesn't look that bad."
"Whatever. I can tell when you're lying, you know. And Dr. Olensky says it'd be even worse tomorrow."
I lay back down on the bed. "There probably isn't enough concealer in the world to cover this, is there? Tasha and I'll have to invest in some Phantom of the Opera-style masks."
She sighed and sat on the bed near me. "Too bad I can't just heal it."
I smiled.
"That would be nice."
The compulsion and charisma brought on by Spirit were great, but really, healing was her coolest ability. The range of things she could achieve was staggering. Lissa was also thinking about what Spirit could do.
"I wish there was some other way to control the Spirit, in a way that still let me use the magic."
"Yeah," I said. I understood her burning desire to do great things and help people. It radiated off of her. Hell, I would have also liked to have this eye cleared up in an instant rather than days.
"I wish there were, too."
She sighed again. "And there's more to me than just wishing I could heal and do other stuff with Spirit. I also, well, just miss the magic. It's still there. It's just blocked off by the pills. It's burning inside of me. It wants me, and I want it. But there's a wall between us. You just can't imagine it.
I can, actually.
It was true. Along with having a general sense for her feelings, I could sometimes also slip into her. It was hard to explain and even harder to endure. When that happened, I could literally see through her eyes and feel what she experienced. During those times, I was her. Many times, I'd been in her head while she longed for the magic, and I'd felt the burning need she spoke of. She often woke up at night, yearning for the power she could no longer reach.
"Oh, yeah," she said ruefully. "I forget about that sometimes."
A sense of bitterness filled her. It wasn't directed at me so much as it was the no-win nature of her situation. Anger sparked inside of her. She didn't like feeling helpless any more than I did. The anger and frustration intensified into something darker and uglier, something I didn't like.
"Hey," I said, touching her arm. "You okay?"
She closed her eyes briefly, then opened them.
"I just hate it."
The intensity of her feelings reminded me of our conversation, the one we'd had just before I went to the Badika house.
"You still feel like the pills might be weakening?"
"I don't know. A little."
"Is it getting worse?"
She shook her head.
"No, I still can't use the magic. I feel closer to it, but it's still blocked off."
"But you still... your moods..."
"Yeah, they're acting up. But don't worry," she said, seeing my face. "I'm not seeing things or trying to hurt myself."
"Good." I was glad to hear it, but still worried. Even if she still couldn't touch the magic, I didn't like the idea of her mental state slipping again. Desperately, I hoped the situation would stabilize on its own.
"I'm here," I told her softly, holding her gaze. "If anything happens that's weird, you tell me, okay?"
Like that, the dark feelings disappeared within her. As they did, I felt a weird ripple in the bond. I can't explain what it was, but I shuddered from the force. Lissa didn't notice. Her mood perked up again, and she smiled at me.
"Thanks," she said. "I will."
I smiled, happy to see her back to normal. We lapsed into silence, and for the briefest of moments, I wanted to pour my heart out to her. I'd had so much on my mind lately. My mother, Dimitri, and the Badika house. I'd been keeping those feelings locked up, and they were tearing me apart. Now, feeling so comfortable with Lissa for the first time in a long time, I finally felt that I could let her into my feelings for a change. Before I could open my mouth, I felt her thoughts suddenly shift. They became eager and nervous. She had something she wanted to tell me, something she'd been thinking about intently. So much for pouring my heart out. If she wanted to talk, I wouldn't burden her with my problems. So I pushed them aside and waited for her to speak.
"I found something in my research with Miss Carmack. Something strange."
"Oh?" I asked, instantly curious. Moroi usually developed their specialized element during adolescence. After that, they were put into magic classes specific to that element. But as the only spirit user on record at the moment, Lissa didn't really have a class she could join. Most people believe she just hadn't specialized. But she and Miss Carmack, the magic teacher at St. Vladimir's, had been meeting independently to learn what they could about spirit. They researched both current and old records, checking for clues that might lead to other spirit users, now that they knew some of the telltale signs, an inability to specialize, mental instability, etc.
I didn't find any confirmed spirit users, but I did find reports of, unexplained phenomena.
I blinked in surprise. "What kind of stuff?" I asked, pondering what would count as unexplained phenomena for vampires. When she and I had lived with humans, we would have been considered unexplained phenomena.
"They're scattered reports, but, like, I read this one about a guy who could make others see things that weren't there. He could get them to believe they were seeing monsters or other people or whatever."
"That could be compulsion."
"Really powerful compulsion. I couldn't do that, and I'm stronger, or used to be, in it than anyone we know. And that power comes from using spirit."
"So," I finished, "you think this illusion guy must have been a spirit user, too?"
She nodded.
"Why not contact him and find out?" Because there's no information listed. It's secret. And there are others just as strange, like someone who could physically drain others. People standing nearby would get weak and lose all their strength. They'd pass out. And there was someone else who could stop things in mid-air when they were thrown at him. Excitement lit up her features.
He could have been an air user, I pointed out.
Maybe, she said. I could feel the curiosity and excitement swirling through her. She desperately wanted to believe there were others out there like her. I smiled.
Who knew? Maroi have Roswell and Area 51 type stuff. It's a wonder I'm not being studied somewhere to see if they can figure out the bond.
Lissa's speculative mood turned teasing. I wish I could see into your mind sometimes. I'd like to know how you feel about Mason.
He's my friend, I said stoutly, surprised at the abrupt change in subject. That's it.
She tisked. You used to flirt and do other stuff with any guy you could get your hands on.
Hey, I said, offended. I wasn't that bad.
Okay, maybe not, but you don't seem interested in guys anymore.
I was interested in guys. Well, one guy.
Mason's really nice, she continued, and crazy about you.
He is, I agreed. I thought about Mason, about that brief moment when I thought he was sexy outside Stan's class. Plus, Mason was really funny, and we got along beautifully. He wasn't a bad prospect as far as boyfriends went.
You guys are a lot alike. You're both doing things you shouldn't.
I laughed. That was also true. I recalled Mason's eagerness to take on every Strigoi in the world. I might not be ready for that, despite my outburst in the car, but I shared some of his recklessness. It might be time to give him a shot, I thought. Bantering with him was fun, and it had been a long time since I'd kissed anyone. Dimitri made my heart ache, but, well, it wasn't like anything else was going on there. Lissa watched me appraisingly, like she knew what I was thinking. Well, aside from the Dimitri stuff.
I heard Meredith say you were an idiot for not going out with him. She said it's because you think you're too good for him.
What? That's not true.
Hey, I didn't say it. Anyway, she said she's thinking of going after him.
Mason and Meredith? I scoffed. That's a disaster in the making. They have nothing in common.
It was petty, but I'd gotten used to Mason always doting on me. Suddenly, the thought of someone else getting him irked me.
You're possessive, Lissa said, again guessing my thoughts. No wonder she got so annoyed at me reading her mind.
Only a little.
She laughed.
Rose, even if it's not Mason, you really should start dating again. There are lots of guys who would kill to go out with you, guys who are actually nice.
I hadn't always made the best choices when it came to men. Once again, the urge to spill all my worries to her seized me. I'd been hesitant to tell her about Dimitri for so long, even though the secret burned inside of me. Sitting with her here reminded me that she was my best friend. I could tell her anything and she wouldn't judge me. But, just like earlier, I lost the chance to tell her what was on my mind. She glanced over at her alarm clock and suddenly sprang up from the bed.
I'm late. I've got to meet Christian.
Joy filled her, underscored with a bit of nervous anticipation. Love. What could you do? I swallowed back the jealousy that started to raise its ugly head. Once again, Christian had taken her away from me. I wasn't going to be able to unburden myself tonight. Lissa and I left the dorm, and she practically sprinted away, promising we'd talk tomorrow. I wandered back to my own dorm. When I got to my room, I passed by my mirror and groaned when I saw my face. Dark purple surrounded my eye. In talking to Lissa, I'd almost forgotten about the whole incident with my mother. Stopping to get a closer look, I stared at my face. Maybe it was egotistical, but I knew I looked good. I wore a C-cup and had a body much coveted in a school where most of the girls were supermodel slim. And as I'd noted earlier, my face was pretty too. On a typical day, I was a 9 around here. 10 on a very good one. But today? Yeah. I was practically in negative numbers. I was going to look fabulous for the ski trip. My mom beat me up, I informed my reflection. It looked back sympathetically. With a sigh, I decided I might as well get ready for bed. There was nothing else I wanted to do tonight, and maybe extra sleep would speed the healing.
I went down the hall to the bathroom to wash my face and brush my hair. When I got back to my room, I slipped on my favorite pajamas, and the feel of the soft flannel cheered me up a little. I was packing my backpack for the next day when a burst of emotion abruptly shot through my bond with Lissa. It caught me unaware and gave me no chance to fight it. It was like being knocked over by a hurricane-force wind, and suddenly, I was no longer looking at my backpack. I was inside Lissa, experiencing her world firsthand. And that's when things got awkward, because Lissa was with Christian, and things were getting hot. Chapter 8. Christian was kissing her, and wow, was it a kiss. He wasn't messing around. It was the kind of kiss that small children shouldn't be allowed to see. Hell, it was the kind of kiss no one should be allowed to see, let alone experience through a psychic link. As I've noted before, strong emotion from Lissa could make this phenomenon happen, the one where I got pulled inside her head. But always, always it was because of some negative emotion. She'd get upset or angry or depressed, and that would reach out to me. But this time, she wasn't upset. She was happy. Very, very happy. Oh, man, I needed to get out of here. They were up in the attic of the school's chapel, or, as I'd like to call it, their love nest. The place had been a regular hangout for them, back when each of them was feeling antisocial and wanted to escape. Eventually, they'd decided to be antisocial together, and one thing had led to another. Since they started publicly dating, I hadn't known they spent much time here anymore. Maybe they were back for old time's sake. And indeed, a celebration did seem to be going on. Little scented candles were set up around the dusty old place, candles that filled the air with the scent of lilacs. I would have been a little nervous about setting all those candles in a confined space filled with flammable boxes and books, but Christian probably figured he could control any accidental infernos. They finally broke that insanely long kiss and pulled back to look at each other. They lay on their sides on the floor. Several blankets had been spread under them. Christian's face was open and tender as he regarded Lissa, his pale blue eyes aglow with some inner emotion. It was different from the way Mason regarded me. There was certainly adoration with him, but Mason's was a lot like when you walk into a church and fall to your knees in awe and fear of something you worship but don't really understand. Christian clearly worshipped Lissa, in his way, but there was a knowing glint to his eyes, a sense that the two of them shared an understanding of each other so perfect and powerful that they didn't even need words to convey it. "Don't you think we are going to go to hell for this?" asked Lissa. He reached out and touched her face, trailing his fingers along her cheek and neck and down to the top of her silky shirt. She breathed heavily at that touch, at the way it could be so gentle and small, yet evoke such a strong passion within her. "For this?" He played with the shirt's edge, letting his finger just barely brush inside of it. "No," she laughed. "For this." She gestured around the attic. "This is a church. We shouldn't be doing this kind of, thing up here."
"Not true," he argued.
Gently, he pushed her onto her back and leaned over her.
"The church is downstairs. This is just storage. God won't mind."
"You don't believe in God," she chastised. Her hands made their way down his chest. Her movements were as light and deliberate as his, yet they clearly triggered the same powerful response in him. He sighed happily as her hand slid under his shirt and up his stomach.
"I'm humoring you."
"You'd say anything right now," she accused. Her fingers caught the edge of his shirt and pushed it up. He shifted so she could push it all the way off him and then leaned back over her, bare-chested.
"You're right," he agreed.
He carefully undid one button on her blouse, just one. Then he again leaned down and gave her one of those hard, deep kisses. When he came up for air, he continued on as though nothing had happened.
"Tell me what you need to hear, and I'll say it."
He unfastened another button.
There's nothing I need to hear, she laughed. Another button popped free. You can tell me whatever you want. It'd just be nice if it were true.
The truth, huh? No one wants to hear the truth. The truth is never sexy. But you?
The last button came undone, and he spread her shirt away.
You are too goddamn sexy to be real.
His words held his trademark snarky tone, but his eyes conveyed a different message entirely. I was witnessing this scene through Lissa's eyes, but I could imagine what he saw. Her smooth white skin, slender waist and hips, a lacy white bra. Through her, I could feel that the lace was itchy, but she didn't care. Feelings both fond and hungry spread over his features. From within Lissa, I could feel her heart race and breathing quicken. Emotions similar to Christian's clouded all other coherent thoughts. Shifting down, he lay on top of her, pressing their bodies together. His mouth sought hers out again, and as their lips and tongues made contact, I knew I had to get out of there. Because I understood it now. I understood why Lissa had dressed up and why the love nest had been decked out like a Yankee Candle showroom. This was it. The moment. After a month of dating, they were going to have sex. Lissa, I knew, had done it before with a past boyfriend. I didn't know Christian's past, but I sincerely doubted many girls had fallen prey to his abrasive charm. But in feeling what Lissa felt, I could tell that none of that mattered. Not in that moment. In that moment, there were only the two of them, and the way they felt about each other right now. And in a life filled with more worries than someone her age should have had, Lissa felt absolutely certain about what she was doing now. It was what she wanted. What she'd wanted for a very long time with him. And I had no right to be witnessing it. Who was I kidding? I didn't want to witness it. I took no pleasure in watching other people get it on, and I sure as hell didn't want to experience sex with Christian. It'd be like losing my virginity, virtually. But Jesus Christ, Lissa wasn't making it easy to get out of her head. She had no desire to detach from her feelings and emotions, and the stronger they grew, the stronger they held me. Trying to distance myself from her, I focused my energies on coming back to myself, concentrating as hard as I could. More clothes disappeared. Come on, come on, I told myself sternly. The condom came out. Yikes. You're your own person, Rose. Get back in your head. Their limbs intertwined, their bodies moving together. Son of a... I ripped out of her and back to myself. Once again, I was back in my room, but I no longer had any interest in packing my backpack. My whole world was askew. I felt strange and violated, almost unsure if I was Rose or if I was Lissa. I also felt that resentment toward Christian again. I certainly didn't want to have sex with Lissa, but there was that same pang inside of me, that frustrated feeling that I was no longer the center of her world. Leaving the backpack untouched, I went right to bed, wrapping my arms around myself and curling into a ball to try to squelch the ache within my chest. I fell asleep pretty quickly and woke up early as a result. Usually, I had to be dragged out of bed to go meet Dimitri, but today, I showed up early enough that I actually beat him to the gym. As I waited, I saw Mason cutting across to one of the buildings that held classrooms. Whoa, I called. Since when are you up this early?
Since I had to retake a math test, he said, walking over to me.
He gave me his mischievous smile.
Might be worth skipping, though, to hang out with you.
I laughed, remembering my conversation with Lissa. Yes, there were definitely worse things I can do than flirt and start something with Mason. Nah, you might get in trouble. Then I'd have no real challenge on the slopes. He rolled his eyes, still smiling.
I'm the one with no real challenge, remember?
You ready to bet on something yet? Or are you still too afraid?
Watch it,
he warned.
Or I might take back your Christmas present.
You got me a present? I hadn't expected that.
Yep. But if you keep backtalking, I might give it to someone else.
Like Meredith? I teased.
She isn't even in your league, and you know it.
Even with a black eye? I asked with a grimace. Even with two black eyes. The look he gave me just then wasn't teasing or even really suggestive. It was just nice. Nice, friendly, and interested. Like he really cared. After all the stress lately, I decided I liked being cared about. And with the neglect I was starting to feel from Lissa, I realized I also kind of liked having someone who wanted to pay so much attention to me. What are you doing on Christmas? I asked. He shrugged.
Nothing. My mom almost came down but had to cancel at the last minute. You know, with everything that happened.
Mason's mother wasn't a guardian. She was a dampier who'd chosen to just be domestic and have kids. As a result, I knew he saw her quite a bit. It was ironic, I thought, that my mom actually was here, but for all intents and purposes, she might as well have been somewhere else.
Come hang with me, I said on impulse. I'll be with Lissa and Christian and his aunt. It'll be fun.
Really?
Very fun.
That's not what I was asking about.
I grinned. I know. Just be there, okay? He swept me one of the gallant bows he liked to make.
Absolutely.
Mason wandered off just as Dimitri showed up for our practice. Talking to Mason had made me feel giddy and happy. I hadn't thought about my face at all with him, but with Dimitri, I suddenly became self-conscious. I didn't want to be anything less than perfect with him, and as we walked inside, I went out of my way to avert my face so he couldn't look at me full on. Worrying about that brought my mood down, and as it plummeted, all the other things that had been upsetting me came tumbling back. We returned to the training room with the dummies, and he told me he simply wanted me to practice the maneuvers from 2 days ago. Happy he wasn't going to bring up the fight, I set to my task with a burning zeal, showing the dummies just what would happen if they messed with Rose Hathaway. I knew my fighting fury was fired up by more than just a simple desire to do well. My feelings were out of control this morning, raw and intense after both the fight with my mother and what I'd witnessed with Lissa and Christian last night. Dimitri sat back and watched me, occasionally critiquing my technique and offering suggestions for new tactics.
"Your hair's in the way," he said at one point. "Not only are you blocking your peripheral vision, you're running the risk of letting your enemy get a handhold."
"If I'm actually in a fight, I'll wear it up," I grunted as I shoved the stake neatly up between the dummy's ribs. I didn't know what these artificial bones were made of, but they were a bitch to work around. I thought about my mom again and added a little extra force to the jab. "I'm just wearing it down today, that's all."
"Rose," he said warningly.
Ignoring him, I plunged again. His voice came more sharply the next time he spoke.
"Rose, stop."
I backed away from the dummy, surprised to find my breathing labored. I hadn't realized I was working that hard. My back hit the wall. With nowhere to go, I looked away from him, directing my eyes toward the ground.
"Look at me," he ordered.
"Dimitri."
"Look at me."
No matter our close history, he was still my instructor. I couldn't refuse a direct order. Slowly, reluctantly, I turned toward him, still tilting my head slightly down so the hair hung over the sides of my face. Rising from his chair, he walked over and stood before me. I avoided his eyes, but saw his hand move forward to brush back my hair. Then it stopped, as did my breathing. Our short-lived attraction had been filled with questions and reservations, but one thing I'd known for sure, Dimitri had loved my hair. Maybe he still loved it. It was great hair, I'll admit. Long and silky and dark. He used to find excuses to touch it, and he'd counseled me against cutting it, as so many female guardians did. His hand hovered there, and the world stood still as I waited to see what he would do. After what seemed like an eternity, he let his hand gradually fall back to his side.
burning disappointment washed over me. Yet at the same time, I'd learned something. He'd hesitated. He'd been afraid to touch me, which maybe, just maybe, meant he still wanted to. He'd had to hold himself back. I slowly tipped my head back so that we made eye contact. Most of my hair fell back from my face, but not all. His hand trembled again, and I hoped again he'd reach forward. The hand steadied. My excitement dimmed.
"Does it hurt?"
he asked. The scent of that aftershave, mingled with his sweat, washed over me. God, I wish he had touched me. "No," I lied.
"It doesn't look so bad,"
he told me.
"It'll heal."
"I hate her," I said, astonished at just how much venom those three words held. Even while suddenly turned on and wanting Dimitri, I still couldn't drop the grudge I held against my mother.
"No, you don't,"
he said gently.
"I do." "You don't have time to hate anyone,"
he advised, his voice still kind.
"Not in our profession. You should make peace with her."
Lissa had said exactly the same thing. Outrage joined my other emotions. The darkness within me stirred to unfurl. "Make peace with her? After she gave me a black eye on purpose? Why am I the only one who sees how crazy this is?"
"She absolutely did not do it on purpose," he said, voice hard. "No matter how much you resent her, you have to believe that. She wouldn't do that. And anyway, I saw her later that day. She was worried about you."
"Probably more worried someone will bring her up on child abuse charges," I grumbled.
"Don't you think this is the time of year for forgiveness?"
I sighed loudly. "This isn't a Christmas special. This is my life. In the real world, miracles and goodness just don't happen." He was still eyeing me calmly.
"In the real world, you can make your own miracles."
My frustration suddenly hit a breaking point, and I gave up trying to maintain my control. I was so tired of being told reasonable, practical things whenever something went wrong in my life. Somewhere in me, I knew Dimitri only wanted to help, but I just wasn't up for the well-meant words. I wanted comfort for my problems. I didn't want to think about what would make me a better person. I wished he'd just hold me and tell me not to worry. "Okay, can you just stop this for once?" I demanded, hands on my hips.
"Stop what?"
"The whole profound Zen crap thing. You don't talk to me like a real person. Everything you say is just some wise life lesson nonsense. You really do sound like a Christmas special." I knew it wasn't entirely fair to take my anger out on him, but I found myself practically shouting. "I swear, sometimes it's just like you want to hear yourself talk. And I know you're not always this way. You're perfectly normal when you talk to Tasha, but with me? You're just going through the motions. You don't care about me. You're just stuck in your stupid mentor role." He stared at me, uncharacteristically surprised.
"I don't care about you?"
"No." I was being petty. Very, very petty. And I knew the truth, that he did care, and was more than just a mentor. I couldn't help myself, though. It just kept coming and coming. I jabbed his chest with my finger. "I'm just another student to you. You just go on and on with your stupid life lessons so that..." The hand I'd hoped would touch my hair suddenly reached out and grabbed my pointing hand. He pinned it to the wall, and I was surprised to see a flare of emotion in his eyes. It wasn't exactly anger, but it was frustration of another kind.
"Don't tell me what I'm feeling," he growled.
I saw then that half of what I'd said was true. He was almost always calm, always in control, even when fighting. But he'd also told me how he'd once snapped and beaten up his Maroi father. He'd actually been like me once, always on the verge of acting without thinking, doing things he knew he shouldn't. "That's it, isn't it?" I asked.
"What?"
"You're always fighting for control. You're the same as me."
"No,"
he said, still obviously worked up.
"I've learned my control."
Something about this new realization emboldened me.
No, I informed him. You haven't.